It is indeed. Welcome into the program. Noah Haynes is at the control. We thank you all for dialing us in and all for the opportunity to call us as well, as we're going to jump on the phones early and often today. Greg Kimbrell probably going to the Orioles. There's an interesting story if you're an old Braves fan and a fan of guys that have had much success after playing high school and college ball in Alabama. And then there are the quarterback transfers, which are just piling up like bricks. That's an incredible story. Of course, we always talk about Alabama football and basketball. That is welcomed as well. So here we go on a Wednesday, Lars. What's up in your world?
Well, a lot of noise is up right outside my window again. It's Wednesday, of course, right? But, Matt, you buried the lead. You buried the lead because the top story has got to be we finally have the details of the origins of the Taylor Swift-Kelce romance. Oh. Are you just? Can you wait to hear this? It is gripping, compelling stuff. That so Time Magazine named her the Person of the Year, and in the article, she opens up for the first time about how her relationship with Travis Kelce started. And she said, quote, "This all started when Travis very adorably put me on blast on his podcast, which I thought was metal as hell. We started hanging out right after that. So we actually had a significant amount of time that no one knew, which I'm grateful for because we got to get to know each other." And then she said she denied attending the Chiefs game. She denied saying that that when she went to the Chiefs game against Chicago, that was their first date. She said, "By the time I went to that first game, we were a couple. I think some people think they saw our first date at that game. We could never be psychotic enough to hard launch a first date." So there you have it. The world has been waiting to know how this blossoming romance between the Chiefs, Travis Kelce, really? And Taylor Swift began.
You think the world has been waiting enough? I had a great idea. Turn down your microphone and turn up the lawnmowers.
You know I'm saying this all tongue-in-cheek, right?
Of course I do. But I have questions based on just what on her verbiage. What does metal mean?
Well,
metal? Is that what
Yeah, I think we're going to... Yeah, it was metal as hell. It was cool.
Like hardcore.
No.
Yeah, that was hardcore. Yeah, we're going to need we need you to translate here.
I know my generation had some words that are not used anymore that were new then, like groovy. And I still maintain that we were the origins of, hey, that's cool. And they make sense to me. But metal? And what was the other one? The dipping?
Well, so she said that Travis very adorably put me on blast on his podcast.
I don't even know what that means.
Noah, on blast means like he made me aware, right? Or
well, I would say he like, I don't know exactly what he said, but he probably just like called her out, like mentioned her and was like, oh, Taylor Swift. Usually it's like playful ribbing a little bit, or it can be playful or it can be like calling someone out and like sort of criticizing them. But it's to call someone out, name drop someone, and like say something about them. Usually something with a negative slant, but it can be just teasing.
Okay. And so she then clearly reached out to him. I think so. So he kind of made the first move, but she made the real first move, which is cool. I like that. I like that in a woman. Go after what you want.
And then
she said we would never be psychotic enough to hard launch a first date. Okay. Noah.
There's another one. Hard launch.
Yes. Okay. So this is what I was not too familiar with this until last year. So it's soft launch versus hard launch. A soft launch is whenever you, like, by bits and pieces, sort of let the internet know that you have a significant other. But, like, you might post, like, a picture of you, like, and someone's hand is in the photo, and people are kind of like, well, who is this? So, but you don't really, until it's, like, super official and you guys feel certain about the relationship, then you're like, oh, this is my boyfriend, or I'm talking to this person. Whereas a hard launch is you just, like, immediately say, like, I'm talking to this person, and if it doesn't work out, I guess I'm just going to be embarrassed.
Yeah. And she did, she went on, this will be the last, and there are really important stories to get to. Another one, Matt, is that the NCAA has proposed a new framework for how to pay athletes at the richest programs. And it is something that is remarkably similar to what our old partner Jay Barker has been advocating for a long time. But before we get to that, I just got to finish this. She did say that, you know, they have been seen everywhere from Saturday Night Live to a bunch of different New York restaurants. And Swift implied that that is by design. And here's another juicy quote. Quote, when you say a relationship is public, that means I'm going to see him do what he loves. We're showing up for each other. Other people are there and we don't care. The opposite of that is you have to go to an extreme amount of effort to make sure no one knows that you're seeing someone, and we're just proud of each other. So there you go.
Isn't that sweet?
Do they make it? Noah, we need your opinion. Do they make it all the way to the finish line and marriage?
I don't know that Taylor Swift will ever get married, but I think this seems like a positive relationship. I think
it does.
Switching up, it's like whenever you date somebody of the same type of people, it's like switch up who you're dating. I think she switched up the type of person she's dating. So I'm interested to see how it goes.
Wait a minute. You're giving some really good dating advice. Switch it up. Like, if you date somebody and it doesn't work, just then the next person you date the opposite?
Or date someone, like, she's dated a lot of, like, music celebrities or movie stars, but now she's dating, like, someone who's more of a football person, who's a celebrity that way, which is kind of different. So switching it up.
That makes sense. Matt? I've never heard you sleep on air. That's really good. That's funny.
Well, I'll credit you and Noah. if I have difficulties tonight, I'm going to call you both up. Now, I understand it, but I will say this, though. It just seems an unlikely matchup. This big, burly, talented tight end from the NFL would be, you know, reaching out to Taylor Swift. By the way, I still not listened to any of her songs in its entirety.
I'm surprised that she doesn't have her own channel on Sirius Radio. Because I have Sirius, and, you know, you and I are in the car together a good bit, and I've always wanted to play some of her stuff for you. She's good. She's a real... she's talented.
They're both talented.
Yeah. Noah, are you a Swiftie?
I'm just a casual enjoyer. I like some of her stuff, but not all of it.
Yeah.
My brother's real into it. He went to one of her concerts.
So when you go to
as long as you guys have brought this up. Jeez. Can't believe I'm going to ask this question. We're going to go to the break. Where is she on the list of hot? Is she a top 10 in your book, Lars? I mean, is she a 10?
She's very beautiful. She's striking. Yeah. I would say so.
Is she the type of look that you would date?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That not me.
How would you characterize her looks?
I think she's objectively attractive, but subjectively she's not really my type.
Yeah.
Now I date her for her money. How awful is that? But if anybody listened to the show and agree that she has great wealth, and that makes her a little bit more attractive. They're crazy. All right. I want to get into what you were talking about with the NCAA when we get back. Got a good show lined up for you, as we will have Mike Rodak from Bama 24/7. He'll be on at the bottom of the hour. And there's an article online about the number of quarterbacks that are getting into the transfer portal. And some of them Just my jaw drops. You know, these guys were having pretty good success at their school. And, you know, but one guy leaves. And I also feel greatly for the guys that have been standing in line behind them and suddenly a guy cuts in front of them. I guess that's standard procedure. Let's take a break on Big Noon Sports. When we get back, we'll talk more NCAA football. Of course, we're all acutely aware that Alabama's football team is preparing for Michigan, and lots of thoughts by that. And there is still a whole lot of griping going on in Tallahassee and Florida State, and now there are talks of lawsuits. It did cost the Seminoles a whole lot of money. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Your Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny but very cool afternoon. The high today, 52. A freeze late tonight, clear with a low at 30. We look for a warming trend tomorrow and Friday. The sky mostly sunny both days. The high tomorrow, 59. The high Friday, 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 53 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plane. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Trolls, and we are talking about some sports now, okay? The Taylor Swift and Kelce stuff is in the rearview mirror. Although I think a lot of the nation is quite enamored by this. I'm not one of them. I wasn't first. Okay, let's go to the phones at 205-342-9904. Ira joins us. My friend Ira, how are you?
Matt, hello to you and Lars.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Yes, Roll Tide. And Matt, blast me out of here now on this interview. So
that would be really metal if he did it.
There you go. I want these
Ira, things. That's the laugh of the day. Thank you.
Yeah. Matt, two things. First, is it possible for you to play an interview that was on Feinbaum's show yesterday with Terry on Arnold, or is that outside the scope of network,
right? You know, Ira, many of those lines have just been erased. Now, I don't know that we would play its entirety, but I think we could get
I bet a lot of your listeners maybe heard it. I don't watch him that much, but man, he's one of Paul's favorite, and it was great. With Jimbo's son. They were in school together. I mean, it gave such a history, and he almost went to Florida State. Let Willie, what was the coach's name? They let go and hired this current guy.
Willie. Then he ended up going to South Florida, I think. Taggart.
Willie Taggart. Yeah.
Yes.
Let me tell you, Ira. Let me tell you something real quick.
All right.
Because if nothing else, I'll grab it from them. Terrion Arnold is a part of what's been put together by the Alabama Crimson Tide, or him, or his agent. But he does interviews, and, you know, he interviews for pay. And that's NIL, and to me, that's good NIL.
Wow.
And one of the deals he has is with Crane Works, you know, the huge construction renters of all the cranes that you see on these huge construction sites.
What a personal young man he is.
He's sponsored by Crane Works to be on Jocks. And I was listening to him 30 minutes before we went on the show. And he is just a dynamic interview and a fun person. They got to talking about the kind of music that he listens to before the game. And, Lars, you know, that's the kind of stuff we eat up. But he listens to James Brown and gospel. And then he said he loves Phil Collins. But I've got you've touched a really good nerve in talking about Terrion Arnold. I love the guy.
If you can't play it for the audience, at least you listen to it. I mean, it's great. And I bet there's 7 or 8 points besides the Tallahassee school talk and where he almost went to college. It was great. So, but my second thing in short, I want to you to play with this 12-team playoff, Matt, for this year's selection. And we'll break some more hearts right quick. And I want to preface, if you can pull it up, I'm looking at the committee's, you know, final 25. And there's 4 SEC teams in there, Matt, in the top 12. And LSU's 13th. But my preface was going to be, isn't it going to 12 to bring in some of the schools like Liberty at 13-0? Wouldn't they be a candidate to be included or not, or do the guidelines change? Play with me.
I think that's why it's designed. Not 100%.
Okay.
But it's designed, I guess, to prevent things like happening this year. But you just mentioned it. Right now, LSU'd be, everybody in Baton Rouge would be throwing their arms up if they did 12 because they weren't in. So I don't think you're necessarily going to rid yourself of the problem of who's not in. But I do think it's going to give a Tulane, a Liberty, you know, give somebody like that a real shot.
Each one you add, Matt, besides the 5, takes up a spot in that 12, right? I mean, who?
Yeah.
So, but now LSU's 13. Don't let me mislead you or the folks. But there's 4 SEC teams in the top 11, Mississippi, Missouri, Georgia, and Alabama. No way they'll put 4 SEC teams in the final playoff, would they?
Yeah, I mean, and you easily could put LSU in front of Oklahoma, so you really could have 5. And just looking at these rankings, what strikes me, and this is really the first time I've taken a hard look past 4, 5, 6, is Missouri at 9. What a great job Eli Drinkwitz has done there and building that program. And, you know, hopefully he can keep it going. And also, wouldn't it be fun if Lane were in the playoffs, right, with Ole Miss? That would add some spice to everything. But, it's hard to envision the committee putting in. I wonder, Ira, you bring up a great point. Will the parameters – will the sort of guidelines for what they use to apply the metrics, will they change a little bit? Because you don't want a situation where you have 5 SEC teams and a 12-team playoff.
I totally agree, but that was my first thought when I started looking at this last night. I said, what would happen this year? And I said, no way. They're not going to put 4 SEC teams in the final 12. But I didn't know for sure if the committee was still going to be involved next year. Is that they are?
Or do as you know far that? As I know, as far as I know, yes.
Yeah.
I think Lars is right, though. I think you're going to have to change a little bit of your criteria.
But, you know, in years past, there's Cincinnati and South Florida and some of the, like you said, Tulane, Matt. I mean, if it's been in the guidelines, they need to get that clear, because or else there'll be more teams mad than Florida State.
I mean, and would you put Liberty in? And you mentioned Liberty, Matt, 13-0, and right now they're 20. They're 23 in this ranking, but you know, do you put more value on going undefeated?
Well, and also, in that case, man, their strength of schedule is not going to measure up to anybody.
No.
So, and that seems to be one of the larger weighing points here. And against being a Power 5 conference. I mean, is a number two team in the SEC better than a Liberty? Yeah.
Well, they are, Matt, but was it in did it move to 12 to include? That's what my question is. Why?
And I think it did.
Okay.
I don't know if it will. Well, how about that for sitting on the fence?
I'm going to listen. I'm glad this is of interest to you. And, we've got 3.5 weeks, Gary reminded us, till we play football again. So let's talk about some good things. And I'm so proud we're in. My goodness.
Me too. Well said, Ira. Good call. Well, please, God, phone off.
Thank you, Ira. Matt, one person who does not sit on the fence is Tim Brando. Tim Brando is going to join us at 1:15, and I believe wasn't his quote something to the effect of "There's no way in hell Alabama's going to make it into the college football playoffs."
I think earlier in the year he said that. Maybe when they were sitting at 8, I don't know.
No, I think he said it last week.
Oh,
because
did he?
Yeah, because he said that both Oklahoma State would have to beat Texas and Louisville would have to beat Florida State for Alabama to have a chance. Well, neither of those things happened. Alabama's in.
I think a lot of people thought that. But Brando's going to light it up. Meantime, Mike Rodak is with us on the other side of the break. You're listening to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Down to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports. And quite a few of our interviews and programming, context of this show, are brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker. In tune to that, let's go to Mike Rodak of Bama 24/7. Mike, how are you? I know it's a little chilly, but sure is sunny. Things good in your life?
Yeah, all good here. Just enjoying the first week without football in a while.
Are you doing anything to get away from it?
I wish. There's still still news to write about, still things to do. So never really truly ends until you get into the middle of January or so.
Mike, did you happen to see, and I'm guessing you did, this NCAA proposal for a new framework to pay athletes at the richest programs? Basically, it's President Charles Baker. He outlined this new proposal to alter the NCAA structure and create a new subdivision that would allow the richest programs to more directly compensate athletes through the use of what he's called a educational trust funds and direct NIL arrangements. I won't get into the nitty gritty details here, but essentially you're going to create a tier, right, of programs, maybe, I don't know, 70 or so. And I'm guessing it would be within the framework of probably the three conferences, the SEC, the Big Ten, and the Big 12. Just your thoughts on this. And again, if you haven't had a chance to really look into it, we can skip over it.
No, yeah, it's I would add the ACC in there as well. I think
that is a question I have. Like, do you think the ACC survives?
Well, yeah, that is, I guess, a separate question. The ACC is probably the next frontier of realignment too, because I think there's going to be a breaking point, especially with Florida State in their situation right now. They were already upset, with some of the things that were said back over the summer. And you could have teams like Florida State. And to be honest, like, everybody talks about Florida State, Clemson, Miami as being like the schools everybody wants. But I always hear it's actually North Carolina. North Carolina is the big prize that if the Big Ten or the SEC could get them tomorrow, they would. And I think Virginia is also up there as well in terms of new media markets and, teams that have schools that have, pretty big, what the right word is, resources, shall we say. The ACC might break apart because I don't know if Miami and Clemson and Florida State can survive in a conference with Boston College and SMU now, and it doesn't seem to work to me. But if it does survive, then I think you add it to those other three conferences. That brings you to about, I think, 69 or 70 right now. And this is the proposal that Charlie Baker's talking about, where you can't, the same concept applies. You can't have all these schools that have tons of resources in the same subdivision as schools that don't. And there just continues to be more and more schools trying to move up to FBS that don't really belong. The Delta States of the world don't belong in the same division as Alabama and Ohio State. And these schools are trying to operate in a way where there's more efficiency in terms of paying players. And that's part of this proposal as well, where schools will directly be able to enter into deals with players, which moves you closer to what I have been saying for years, I think is eventually going to be the end game of this, which is sort of a professionalized model where there's contracts and collective bargaining and, just kind of more direct salary players. And it could be that these players are eventually deemed employees. There's a lot of litigation out there that's trying to advance that cause. There's national labor relations boards cases, and there's all sorts of things that are pushing things in that direction, and the NCAA is essentially saying, let's try to get out ahead of it. So good for them. I mean, obviously the NCAA has been ripped over the years for being too slow, and this is a pretty forward-thinking model that seems to embrace the reality instead of trying to suppress it. Give Charlie Baker credit too. I mean, I grew up in Massachusetts. He was a two-term Republican governor in Massachusetts who did a really good job of kind of balancing everything.
That says a lot in its own right, yeah. Mike.
It does, exactly. He's really good at kind of balancing interests and trying to bring people together instead of just have people fighting endlessly. So I think that's what he's trying to do here, is instead of fighting all of this, let's think of a model that works for both sides and try to bring everybody together.
Well, it would eliminate that this word's been used a lot, Hail Mary. But I think about the fact that a Tulane could get into this, but let's face it, a Tulane's not going to win, unfortunately. It doesn't have that same long shot glamour that the NCAA basketball tournament, where San Diego State or Florida Atlantic can come in, and they're just about to say, okay, you got 70 schools that are better than everybody else financially and on the football field. Charlie Baker's just saying, as I read it, Mike, he's saying, hey, why don't we recognize it and deal with it?
Right, exactly. And again, I think this is a first step, and right now it would still be under the guise of NIL. It would just be schools directly paying players. There would still be Title IX considerations that would have to come into play in terms of balancing men's and women's sports, which would obviously be very important in this case. If you're paying men's players, you have to pay women's players equally. And then there would still be the prohibition against pay for play, which, again, that would be silly in my mind because this is obviously pay for play, but technically I guess they would keep that in place. So it's one step, but again, there's court cases in California and other states. There's the National Labor Relations thing. There's the antitrust case in the House of Representatives. There's a lot of things that are, from a legal standpoint, continuing to push that cart down the road where I think in an X number of years from now, we're going to be talking about players as employees. And look, I know people don't like that. I think there's a lot of people you listen to, that fans, that will say, it's ruining college sports. It's whatever it is. And look, it's only happening because there's money out there, because people are willing to pay money to millions of dollars to players and hundreds of thousands of dollars for luxury suites, tickets. The money is in the system. It's just where the money is going is changing, where it's not going to be coaches and facilities. It's going to be players getting that share. So to me, it's like, if you want a completely quaint system where players are just playing for the love of the game, that still exists. Like, go watch a Division II school. Go watch an FCS school. Like, that still exists at that level. But there's way too much money in the system, quite frankly, from fans and from boosters and from people who pay, that the money has to go somewhere. And I think this is a more equitable way to pay players instead of just continuing to put it in shiny locker rooms or just continuing to give it to coaches.
Real quick, do you think this proposal has a chance, or a form of this proposal has a chance?
Definitely, yeah. It seems like it's very realistic. I don't think Charlie Baker would be going this far down the road. It's been something they've been working on and expected for a while. This is kind of the big reveal. But from all the people who cover this a little bit more closely in the national level, it really seems like it's something that will happen. Again, it's just what happens after that is the big question in terms of some of the employee status.
Mike, you have an excellent story up on 247sports.com. The headline is this Nick Saban's best coaching job? What he said about each of his assistants, why they deserve credit. In going back and in putting this story together, what did you learn? What did you learn when you actually could piece it all together about what Saban has said about his assistants? And were you surprised by anything that you found out?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways it's what you'd expect, that Nick Saban's probably not going to stand up there and say, I deserve credit for everything. And, you know, it's my best coaching job. And in fact, it was something that he was asked last week by Eli Gold on his radio show where, you know, is this your best coaching job? And Nick Saban said, I wouldn't say that. And then he went into talking about how the real teachers in the building are the ones that are directly working with the players in each position room. So, you know, that's kind of where he gave credit. And I think he really does like this group of assistants. I think he likes, you know, the coordinators that he has, as much as people maybe not like them. You know, fans back in you know, September or October, obviously were getting on Tommy Rees. I think Nick Saban loves Tommy Rees. So there's usually a difference, I think, in public perception sometimes and how Nick views the coaches in the building. And, you know, as just happened this morning, one of those coaches will be leaving, though, and Coleman Hutzler, the outside linebackers coach and special teams coordinator, who's been here 2 years now, is going to Mississippi State, you know, to become their defensive coordinator. So he will be having to replace at least one. I wouldn't be shocked if there is maybe one or two more down the road. But, you know, he likes this group a lot of coaches.
Our guest is Mike Rodak. Read that article and many more from Mike and his wonderful group of writers at Bama 24/7. Mike will be continuing with us. We can talk about Alabama, Michigan, even look back over the selection committee and so forth. As you listen to Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Pass. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny but very cool afternoon, the high today 52. A freeze late tonight, clear with a low at 30. And look for a warming trend tomorrow and Friday. The sky mostly sunny both days. The high tomorrow 59, the high Friday 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 52 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
In fact, it's right here. Big Noon Sports, Noah Haynes is our producer, Lars Matt, and an often guest of ours from Bama 24/7. Read it, okay? Put it on, what do you, put it on your favorites list. That's what you need to do with Mike Rodak. Mike, we were talking about this earlier with the guest, and instead of just going back and forth of the if Florida State, if Alabama, I think we've probably played that out. Will the expansion to 12 cut down on this?
No, because if you think about it, you know, you get the four automatic bids still for the top four conference winners, which next year is going to be the Power Four because the Pac-12 is going to be gone. And, you know, by all accounts, it seems like when they initially announced the 12-team playoff, it was 6 automatic bids, 6 at large. It seems like now that the Pac-12 is gone, they're pretty close to finalizing 5 automatic bids, 7 at large. But even then, you would only have one SEC team that wins the SEC championship, which I don't know if that would be Texas or Alabama this year. Like, both of those are in the top 4. And then you'd have one Big Ten champion, which Michigan and Washington are both Big Ten. And which one of those would be the winner? So only 2 of the current top 4 teams would be top 4 teams next year. And your number 3 team next year would be Florida State as the ACC champion. Your number 4 team next year would be your Big 12 winner, which the highest ranked Big 12 winner this year in terms of the teams that will be in the Big 12 next year is Arizona. And so essentially, under next year's format, you would have teams like Florida State and Arizona that would rise up to become number 3, number 4 seeds, get a first round bye, and then basically, you know, be in position as a well-rested team to beat a team like Alabama or a team like Washington or a team like Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, a team that's not a conference champion, that quite frankly is probably a better team. And so there's still going to be a lot of controversy about that when you have an Arizona that sneaks up to number 4 and you have Alabama that's number 6 or 7. That's just going to be the new frontier and the new place, I think, where people are going to argue. I don't think it's going to fix everything.
With Tyler Buchner entering the transfer portal and going back to Notre Dame to play lacrosse, which, by the way, is an amazing story. I didn't realize that he committed to Michigan as an 8th grader to play midfield in lacrosse for Michigan. But so this leaves for next year, or at least on the roster right now. Let's just stick with that. Milroe, Ty Simpson, Dylan Lonergan, Eli Holstein. Those are the current scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. What do you think the quarterback room is going to look like next year? And is the fact that Ty Simpson hasn't entered the portal, and you said you have quarterbacks all over the country just getting in there, is the fact that he hasn't entered yet indicate that he's going to return?
Yeah, so a few things there. I'll start with Ty. You know, I think there's obviously guys aren't really going to go into the portal right now for Alabama because they're in the playoff. And if you do that, then, you know, you're essentially leaving a key before you can win a national championship. So like even Tyler Buchner went into the lacrosse portal, but he's still going to be with the football team through the playoff. And that's the only player, the only current player who's gone into the portal. So officially, no. I don't think any players are going into portal right now, but that doesn't mean unofficially you can't sort of have those conversations. I think it happens all the time. There's obviously agents that are involved on the NIL side. And so if you are a player thinking about going into the portal, I'm sure you could have an idea of what's out there for you. A team might even save a spot for you, so to speak. And then it officially, you know, you go into the portal officially after your last game. So I want to 100% read into that, but I also wouldn't 100% say that Ty Simpson is gone, because there's, you know, I've heard things the other direction that, you know, maybe he'll stay and continue to try to compete and win. I don't think that's something we can rule out right now. So it'll be a crowded room, and that's the other thing, is that you still have those 5 quarterbacks, because again, Buchner is going to be around for the next month here. Those 5 quarterbacks plus Julian Sayin, the 5-star freshman, is going to be here next week. He arrives on campus, and then the following Wednesday, the 20th, he signs his letter of intent. He's going to be practicing with the team before the Rose Bowl. So you're going to have 6 quarterbacks. You know, Sayin won't play, obviously, but 6 scholarship quarterbacks in practice. And, you know, you can eliminate Buchner in January. Beyond that, you know, I think you still probably lose one more, whether it's Simpson or Holstein, I think would be the 2 favorites in my mind. And then you go into next year, and I think Ty Simpson is a tough spot next year with Lonergan and Sayin and Milroe, but if he feels like he still has a shot here, then I think he'll stay.
Mike, when does the transfer portal close? Isn't it the very first of the year?
So it used to be 45 days when they first came out with this last year. This year they shortened it to 30 days. And so technically that brings it to January 2nd. However, right, there's a provision in there that if you are in a bowl game or, you know, the FCS playoffs or the college football playoff, that you have a 5-day window after your last game. And so if Alabama loses the Rose Bowl, there'll be a five-day window. Their portal for their players will close January 6th. If they make the national championship game, it'll be January 13th.
Okay. You cleared up that. You answered my question in its entirety. Is there a time, guys, if you see all these quarterbacks in the transfer portal, is there a time that they're maybe not going to take that brass ring grab at Alabama or Penn State or USC, and they might just say, hey, let me go to a more of a mid-tier and take my brilliant talent to this level and go ahead and start playing? Because a lot of these transfers are quarterbacks that have gone to big-time universities and seen the competition, and they can't compete.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, and that's kind of what Nick Saban talked about when he says the portal almost creates parity in some ways, because you can build a team faster if you're a new head coach, but also teams that are in that mid-tier, even though they might lose their own players, they could get somebody who comes from a larger school who hasn't played. And so, you know, I think you'll definitely see it. It's just, there's still the NIL aspect, you know, how much those schools can pay versus the big schools, I think it's kind of like free agency. And so your best transfers are still going to go to the big schools that can pay.
Hey, great stuff. I really enjoyed this last segment. Pretty deep dive and you explaining a lot of stuff to us. Thanks, Mike. Happy holidays. I know we'll talk again soon. You got all your Christmas shopping done?
I haven't even started yet, but yeah. I'll get there.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that today. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't started Christmas shopping for my three kids.
And you got three kids, but I don't enjoy
thank you,
getting
Mike.
Out of the masses. Thank
you,
you
got
Mike.
It. Thank you.
See you. See you next week. Christmas talk next hour. Now, got a couple other things. Did you see what happened? Mike McCarthy had to have appendix. We'll talk a little bit of stuff outside the world of Alabama football, but it's always going to be there. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Nick Cope.
The merry-go-round that is the New York Jets quarterback room keeps spinning. Today, Coach Robert Saleh said Zach Wilson will once again start at QB this Sunday when they take on the Texans. Vikings coach Kevin O'Connell said they'll stick with Josh Dobbs at quarterback coming off their bye week. Bills GM Brandon Bean said linebacker Von Miller is available to play this weekend against the Chiefs. Bean also said he doesn't anticipate Miller being placed on the commissioner's exempt list based on talks with the league office. Cowboys coach Mike McCarthy is slated to have surgery today after being diagnosed with appendicitis. He's expected to be released later on today and coach this weekend. In baseball, MLB Network reports the Yankees are close to finalizing a trade for Padres outfielder Juan Soto, and reports say free agent closer Craig Kimbrell is close to signing a deal with the Baltimore Orioles.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Tim Brando, join us in about 15 minutes, so hang on for that. Story on AL.com about the number of quarterbacks. Craig Stevenson from AL.com. used the word Wild West as the transfer portal has opened this past Monday. And quarterback situation is crazy. Max Johnson's on the quarterback. He went from LSU to Texas A&M. He's going to North Carolina because Drake May is going to the NFL. He'll probably walk in there and start. I've always liked him as a quarterback, Lawrence.
Yes, I have too. And it's been surprising that he hasn't been able to find a home. And I think he'll do really good there. Just being the son of Brad Johnson, and he's a gamer, and he's sort of the classic gym rat who just can't get enough. But there are some interesting maneuvers that are going on here right now, and it looks like Dylan Gabriel, the quarterback at Oklahoma, it appears that he's going to Oregon. And I think he is just going to be a tailor-made replacement for Bo Nix. Gabriel's thrown for almost 15,000 yards in his five seasons between UCF and Oklahoma. And 125 touchdowns. He's got experience, and this is a loaded Oregon team. And Gabriel has played in that quick read air raid system for basically his entire career, and that's not too far removed from that RPO playbook that Oregon employed and that Bo Nix has thrived in, right? It's all about like short area accuracy and creativity when a play breaks down, and Dylan Gabriel has that, and so I think he is going to do really well, and it certainly appears as if he is going to be at Oregon. I think Will Howard from Kansas State most likely is going to end up at USC. I think Cameron Ward at Washington State, everybody's going to want this kid. He is really good, but I think he's going to end up at Ohio State. It seems to me that Ryan Day made it pretty clear to his starter, Kyle McCord, that he is not necessarily going to be the starter next year, because McCord really was the first big name to get into the transfer portal. I mean, as soon as that window opened, he was in it. And I think he may end up at Miami, maybe Pitt, we'll see. And another intriguing quarterback, I mean, and there's so many of them, Matt, Will Rogers. I think Will Rogers is going to land in Washington, and that will give the Huskies an immediate answer to who takes Michael Penix Jr.'s place. I think it'll be Rogers, and look, he's already one of the most decorated quarterbacks in SEC history. He broke the SEC's record for completions in October of 2022. And this is amazing. Like, he leaves Starkville with a total of 1,301 completions in his career. And his yards he's passed for, 12,315. That's second in SEC history. Yeah. So, he obviously is comfortable throwing the ball down the field. And that is perfect for what Washington does, because Michael Penix, the best thing he does, he pushes the ball down the field. He led the country, and this is a kind of a weird stat, in air yards in 2023 with 2,186. And that just basically means he's throwing the ball down the field a lot. Huskies use a lot of play action, which was the staple of Mike Leach's air raid, which is what Rogers played in for a long time. And so I expect I think Rodgers and Washington are a perfect fit. It's just crazy how the transfer portal and NIL has just fundamentally changed everything about college football, especially when it comes to the game's most important position, and that's quarterback.
Well, and these are contenders. it's hard to understand, but then again, often you're glad they transferred, like Jermaine Burton and Marshall. I mean, these guys transferred from national championships, and then maybe they're going to win another one with a different team. Then we'll have another category to keep up with. But I'm looking through all of the guys, the quarterbacks of note, and let me tell you, at the very bottom of the article I'm reading, there are others of note. There must be 20 more quarterbacks of noted schools that are also already in the portal. My question is, I haven't seen any of these things where it indicates that Auburn's going to get a quarterback. I haven't seen anything. Have you?
Not yet, but I would assume that Hugh Freeze has got his eyes on someone. But at the same time, I mean, he got pretty good play out of his quarterback in the Iron Bowl. I mean, I don't know. Hugh Freeze might be comfortable with him, Thorne, moving
really?
Forward.
I don't think he is.
I don't think so either. No, I mean, I'm just speculating. I'm just throwing out a maybe, right? But I'm sure that there is one guy that he has targeted. And I would almost think that if you're a quarterback out there and you want to get ready to play in the NFL and you want to be on a big stage, man, Hugh Freeze would be a great coach to go to, because you'd be in a pretty good situation on a up-and-coming program. You're not likely to play for a national championship, but you never know. I thought it was really interesting that and you know I can't pronounce his name, DJ Ungalalale.
Ungalalale.
Yeah, that he got back in the transfer portal.
Yes, he did.
I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, he might go to Florida State according to this article. So I don't know. Dylan Gabriel is the one that really makes me scratch my head, because darn it all, Oklahoma's playing pretty well. They might be a contender next year. And that's the ones that I just question, you know, like Burton transferring from a program that's already established and won a national championship. Why you transfer out of a program that's going to be a contender for the playoffs again? I don't know. Maybe somebody's coming in and hears footsteps. But
moving to the SEC, like Oklahoma's path to the playoffs just got a lot harder. I mean, don't you, in Oregon, granted, they're going to be in the Big Ten, so it's not like Oregon has got a cakewalk, but it's head scratching. Why would Dylan Gabriel leave Oklahoma? Brent Venables just must be beside himself, because,
he beat Texas.
Yeah.
You know, and that Gabriel had a great game.
He had a great game. But, you know, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Is it possible, like, if he does end up at Oregon, is it NIL money? I mean, probably.
Well, yeah, I think the Phil Knight Nike money could attract anybody.
Yeah.
For Jalen Milroe.
I think Jalen Milroe is being compensated pretty well, or at least he will be.
Speculate. What do you think he's making? A couple of mil?
Yeah.
Wow. What would you do if you were a junior in college with $2 million, Lars? I know what you'd do, because you're smart with your money.
You'd
put half of it away. You know?
Use the other half to pay the taxes, because you're going to be taxed. You're going to be taxed at 48%? Something like that?
I think only you would know that. I certainly.
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
All right.
No, it's not 48. I think it's high 30s, but it's a lot. You need to set a lot of money aside for taxes.
I think you set aside at least a third.
Yeah.
Anyway, that keeps you safe because the government will find you, whether you're a starting quarterback or not going down that road. Hey, when we get back.
The government, by the way, they tracked me down and said I owed like $12.45 that I didn't pay. Like, really? Okay. Really,
that would make me breathe a huge sigh of relief. That's all? That's all I missed? Wonderful. I'll send you twice that much. All right. Stand by, folks. The rocket is about to launch. Tim Brando is coming up on Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny but very cool afternoon, the high today 52. A freeze late tonight, clear with a low at 30. And look for a warming trend tomorrow and Friday. The sky mostly sunny both days. The high tomorrow 59, the high Friday 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 53 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Lars, Matt, Noah, the gang is here on a sunny but a little bit chilly Wednesday afternoon. And joining us from Fox Sports, from his home in Louisiana, is Tim Brando. I'm assuming you're home, Tim. You out doing your Christmas shopping?
I was doing a little bit of that yesterday. Not today. So you caught me at a good time. It's great to be with you guys.
Thank you. Well, we got to start with last week because we were talking about Louisville having a win, you know, and Texas Tech having a win. Well, neither one of those happened, and Alabama still got in. Tim, I'm going to just hand you the ball. You can go from there. Was it Florida State or Alabama?
Well, the question always is did the committee get it right? And I sort of understand that to a certain extent, okay? But the question really ought to be, how did the committee go about getting it right? Was that accurate? Is that the way it should be done? And the answer to that is a resounding no. I mean, just, you know, be honest, be transparent, and they never are. They absolutely never are. Boo Corrigan could have just looked right into that camera and told Reese Davis, hey, we had a conundrum here, Reese. The question was, who are you going to take, Texas or Florida State? And the bottom line is, if you're going to take Texas, Alabama had to beat Georgia, and if you were going to take Georgia, then Florida State would get in over Texas, because that committee had made up their minds they were not going to have this 14 field minus an SEC team. I mean, that's the bottom line. That's exactly what happened here, and I credit Commissioner Sankey for doing the groundwork that commissioners must do for their constituency. He hit every platform at the Worldwide Leader, hit it hard, hit it really hard. And he's to be commended for that. He was on McAfee all day Friday. He was on game day with basically a 30 to 45 minute infomercial for not just Alabama, but for Georgia too. You know, I think he wanted to get them both in, and why not? You're the commissioner of the SEC. And he had a lot of ground support from the people that have tremendous influence on that set on game day. And some of them even flip-flop, Greg McElroy being among those. And I have great respect for Greg. I think he and Sean McDonough might be the best broadcast team they have on ESPN. I adore Sean's work, and I think Greg is remarkable. But he had said maybe 3 days earlier, the sanctity of college football is at stake. Florida State needs to get in. So when Herbie went the direction he did, everyone on that set was in lockstep with him, with the exception of Booger McFarland, who was the only contrarian to that concept in the first couple of hours of that. Now, I did wait around because I was waiting to see if Mike Norvell would come on the show, and he did not. But while I was waiting, Dan Mullen came on, albeit not with Kurt by his side or with Reese Davis or the main set, but he was with Matt Berry and I can't remember who the other one that was with him, but might have been RG3. But bottom line is, you know, Dan was another one that spoke up about it and felt that Florida State had been wronged, and they were. There's absolutely no doubt about the fact that they were wronged. And
So to that extent, it's horrific what happened here. But the College Football Playoff Committee had the seeds sown for the corruption from the moment that they went to a 14 playoff. We've been saying it all along. Really fortunate that it had not happened to this extent even sooner. We basically had it at bookends. We had it happen in 2014 when TCU and Baylor got screwed because Ohio State beat Wisconsin 59-0, and Urban Meyer's team jumped three spots and got in. And TCU, for no reason, dropped three spots and went from third to sixth and didn't get in. They basically played Florida State as though they were a group of five team like Cincinnati, or a team that had just lost 65-7 in the championship to Georgia, which TCU had. And by the way, that's another narrative that Sankey trumpeted all through the spring and summer, you know, from the moment they were in Destin forward. Okay. And it worked. I mean, it absolutely worked. Every day in this system, you got to be trumping a narrative, and that was the one that was being trumpeted. And this is, by God, an invitational. In that paragraph, so-called criteria that we kept hearing all about, we all know that criteria is there. All of us have seen it. And basically, the criteria which says, you know, if key players are, that is code for, in the end, if we're up against it, we'll do whatever we, by God, please. And that's exactly what they did. They did whatever they, by God, pleased, and that was, hey, we got to have an SEC team. We can't have this without it. And by Texas winning, that opens the door for us to allow Alabama in, because you couldn't take Alabama without taking Texas. So it was a twofer, one way or the other. If Georgia had won, Texas would have been left out. Florida State would have gotten in at four. It would have been Michigan won. It would have been Georgia 1, Michigan 2, Washington 3, and Florida State 4. That would have been your four had Georgia beaten Alabama. And it came out the way it did, so that's why we got the four that we got.
Tim, what are your initial thoughts on the two semifinal games? And you can start with Texas playing Washington in the Sugar Bowl, and then move on to Alabama playing Michigan, two storied teams facing off in the Rose Bowl.
So you're going to go right there, huh? You don't want to discuss anything that I just said?
No, I do. I do. I have another question on that, Tim.
All
right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's
All
go.
Right. If Alabama were to play Florida State right now, who would be the heavy favorite?
I don't care. That's
no. Answer my question, please, Tim.
Of course, Alabama would. Of course, Alabama would.
Okay. Doesn't that make them the best team available for the four?
No, it does not. No, it does not. And there's another indictment that we let the betting lines determine who gets in. Why don't we just not play any of the regular season, Matt? Well, that's exactly who would be favored. It's who would
right.
be favored.
I did
by
say
how much.
Favored. You're right. You're right.
Yes, you
you're
did.
Right.
Yes, you did.
That's
on social media. That's what every crimson-colored fan on Twitter comes at me with. And I don't give a rat's ass, Matt, who's favored by what. Okay, it's about the job that was done on the field. And one team went 13-0 out of a power conference, played LSU non-conference, a top 15 team, blew them out in the second half, won by double digits. The other team, Alabama, got in on a prayer on 4th-and-31. They were fortunate to beat Arkansas, a prohibitive underdog. We get amnesia about that because why? They're Alabama. They're Alabama. We can't have this without an SEC team. Georgia just lost. You can't take them. Their schedule is garbage. Even with the SEC opposition, their strength of schedule was hovering around 100, worse than Florida State's was. Now, Florida State played everybody they could play in the ACC and won. And they played two games with a second string and a third string quarterback and still won. Okay? So you're going to tell me that team should be treated as though they're a group of five team, which they were. So that is wrong. That is just flat out wrong. But that is the system that we live in. And that's why I have condemned it as corrupt from the jump. Okay?
You got to explain your definition of the word corrupt here. What corrupt is a rather that's a heavy dart to toss. How are they corrupt? How are they corrupt?
They can take whoever they want, whenever they want, and have the ability to call it a playoff. Which
I think that makes them aloof and arrogant. I don't think that necessarily makes them corrupt.
It's corrupt. It's corrupt because they have no transparency. If they came forward and said, guys, here's what the deal was. We were in a situation where, you know, we had to either take Georgia or Alabama because an SEC team had to be in this thing. And we could only take Georgia if they won. We could only take Alabama if we brought in Texas. Just say what's true. So the fact that they come back, Reese Davis asked him, I don't know how many times, and Boo says, well, they went at it six times, seven times, and all we could come up with was this. Well, why is that true? Why is that so? Okay, if they weren't corrupt, why aren't cameras in there during the process? Why wouldn't they allow access to anyone who wants to see how they came up with the four? It is corrupt.
I just got to say one thing. I am really close friends with Kelly Whiteside. She was, and you probably know Kelly, Tim.
I'm not saying the individuals are
well,
corrupt.
But by implication, you are saying that the individuals are corrupt.
No, I am not. I'm saying the system is a corrupt system. I'm not saying the individuals on that committee are corrupt. That is a joke, and that is a lie. And that's an implication that's incorrect.
Wow. Hey, let's do this some more, Tim. Can you hang on?
Sure. I know a lot of people on that committee, too. I know Boo Corrigan, okay? I knew his dad really well. Know his brother, Tim, was a broadcast associate at ESPN with me. You can't take this stuff personally. Once you make it personal, then you're out of line, okay? This is my professional opinion. And Lars, it has been since the beginning of this godforsaken format that they put in place. Four spots for five Power Five teams. It was garbage from the start, and they got exposed for the corruption that they've always had.
Yeah, the math is never fit. You are correct about
never
that.
Fit.
Tim Brando is our guest on Big Noon Sports. We'll continue this conversation in about 3 minutes.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, thanks for dialing us in on this sunny Wednesday afternoon. It's Matt, Lars, Noah's our producer, and Tim Brando from Fox Sports is our guest. Will this situation be remedied at all when they go to 12 and change some of the criteria, Tim?
Yeah, that's the good news, but I think they've definitely got to change the criteria because this debate is not going to stop. It'll be over 10-2 teams and 9-3 teams in the future, and it's pretty evident that the money and the power rules over the integrity. Integrity was lost on Sunday. I mean, it was absolutely lost with what they did to Florida State. And as I said, it could have happened before and probably should have happened before. They got lucky, really. After the debacle in 2014, nobody really made a big deal out of it because TCU and Baylor are not of the same ilk, nor do they have the same history and tradition of Florida State. And at that time, TCU had just really gotten into the Big 12. They had been a Mountain West team not too long before that. So neither Baylor or TCU had the juice of a Florida State. I mean, Florida State, you know, now they're people that you wonder why they've been clamoring to get out of the ACC. This is why. And one thing I didn't mention that I should is that I'm well aware that Jim Phillips, their commissioner, along with the then Commissioner Warren of the Big Ten and George Kliavkoff of the now defunct Pac-12, they formed this ridiculous alliance that kept us from going to 12 this year. Otherwise, Florida State would have been in. So you know Florida State wants the hell out of the ACC. This may really put the Atlantic Coast Conference on a death alert. They could be done in maybe 3 years. I mean, they could. Virginia and North Carolina could wind up going to the Big Ten. Florida State, Clemson, maybe Miami, the SEC. I mean, we could very well be on our way to three conferences, three power conferences, and then whatever's left, maybe forming a consortium for a fourth. in the future. The ACC looked really bad here. I mean, Greg Sankey wiped the floor with Jim Phillips this past week. Mm-hmm. He really did.
Yeah, he did. No question about that. Okay, Tim, just forget about the committee. Just look, forget about committee for a second.
We're good.
Who are the best four teams in college football right now? That is a simple question.
Simple question? There are no four best teams in college football right now. We need to see a playoff. We need to see the teams continue to play. We had eight teams, Lars, eight that could have all been crowing as we were getting through that final weekend. That all had legitimate shots, in my opinion, to get in. Okay, it's not just that simple. I mean, the locals all, listen, I realize politics is always local, fellas, but it's never just the simple answer. Who are the best four teams? Just turning it down, dumbing it down to that one common denominator, which is exactly what the machinations were of the formatting and structure of that game day show on Saturday. Was setting up the commissioner to knock it out of the park. And Herbie and Reese did a great job of throwing some batting practice for him to knock out of the yard. I mean, it was like home run derby for him, okay, to help his case. The narrative was set up beautifully. And, yeah, I know that Alabama potentially is a better matchup in the matchup that they have with Michigan, possibly could even win the game. And maybe Florida State, with its second-string quarterback, getting healthy, which he would be out of concussion protocol to play the game, might not be as good, but we'll never know. We'll never get that opportunity. We'll never see that because those kids who went out and won every single game and did so at the end without first their first string quarterback and then their second string quarterback busted their butts with a great defense, they get no chance. They get no opportunity. Tim. That's the issue here. It's not about who's best versus who's most deserving. Just dumbing it down to that, Lars, is pathetic. It's pathetic.
Go, Tim.
Okay.
I understand, but
the answer to that question is really what we're getting at here. But the answer is,
I'll tell you what. Frame the question differently, and I'll give you a different answer.
Okay, I will. Okay. Tim, in your list of top 10 teams in college football, how do they read right now?
I don't do one after the final
game. What was your last one?
I don't do
what
one.
What was your last one? You don't do the one after one, the college?
The last one, I had Florida State out. But by the way, that's another thing the committee could have done, couldn't they? They could have dropped Florida State exponentially when they lost Jordan Travis. They didn't. They had Alabama at 8, which is where Florida State, by virtue of the decision that they made on Sunday, should have been rather than Alabama. And how do you justify having Florida State at 5, okay, and then Georgia at 6? Is that just supposed to make them feel good? Is that what that's about? Little pat on the butt? I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, I could go over the corruption even more, Lars, if you want. But Bill Corrigan was asked this question about Liberty getting the New Year's Six Bowl over SMU, who beat Tulane. How did that happen, Boo? Well, Liberty won all their games. Really? Oh, it works with Liberty in the New Year's Six, but it doesn't work with Florida State when you're picking the top four. Tell me that's not corruption. Tell me that's not saying whatever the hell is convenient and utilizing that final paragraph in what is your godforsaken invitational, because that's what this is.
No, point.
All these
point.
Titles are mythical. All of them point. Are mythical.
No, point well taken. Point well taken. Okay. Do you think the belly flop that TCU did in the national championship game last year against Georgia played a role in all of this?
Yes, and it shouldn't have. Did they not beat Michigan in the semifinal game? Did we just suddenly forget?
Well, I'd argue that TCU understood.
Did we suddenly get amnesia?
TCU knew that Michigan was stealing signs, and they really flipped the switch on that one. And I think there's more to come out about that.
Well, we'll see. But the bottom line is that was part of the narrative, and that's the other thing that I do have problems with Commissioner Sankey about. Trumpeting that was beneath him. trumpeting, and he did that in Destin. Well, it was 65-7, okay? And it was also inappropriate for Nick Saban to say in the aftermath, well, you know, we really should have probably been in. The final was 60. I mean, if you look back on it, we really probably that's how underhanded after the fact is that? You didn't get in. You lost a couple of okay? So you didn't get in. Get over it. And the fact that, well, you know, we would have been favored, so, and that was the premise that he used. The commissioner of the most powerful conference in America utilizing a 65-7 outcome and a final score as part of his narrative, you know, to me is inappropriate. Now, granted, it worked, and God bless him, Sankey, as I said, absolutely is the most powerful conference commissioner. He clearly made Jim Phillips look bad and the ACC, and understandably, to the victors go the spoils, but that was inappropriate. I mean, blowouts happen in the college game much more so, and we've always had larger spreads and betting lines from Vegas with college than we do with the NFL. This isn't the NFL where every game is, for the most part, a 2.5, 3, maybe 6.5 or 6-point spread. College football has always been different that way at every level, highest level to the lower end of Division I.
Hey, Tim, will it just be the ultimate in poetic justice if Florida State beats Georgia?
None of that matters. No. And that was another stupid thing to say on that set after the fact. Well, boy, they could prove the committee wrong if they beat Georgia. Come on, fellas.
Well, it doesn't help them get the $150 million back.
No, right. Yeah. And do I need to recite for you the narrative on Alabama when they had to play Utah the year Ohio State got in? Do I need to go down that? I mean,
Utah slapped them around pretty good.
But they weren't motivated. You know, they didn't care about that game.
Oklahoma slapped them around, too.
And probably 14 or 15 of the players that are noteworthy are not going to play. Okay? Those games don't matter, Matt. They don't. Okay? They don't.
I just wanted to ask you what you think about the players that decide not to participate in bowl games.
Got no problem with it. I've got no problem with it at all. You'll never hear me go after a player for taking care of himself. If ever there were proof that the system takes care of oneself, not the player, it's what we just witnessed over the weekend. Okay, those kids from Florida State are devastated, may never get over it. Mike Norvell, with his head hanging down, looked like one of the players. I mean, what does he say to his team? By the way, that's a team meeting that you ought to have. Instead of having Hard Knocks go in to do NFL preseason, how about the documentary that could be done on what Florida State's got to do between now and that meaningless glorified exhibition that they're going to have with Georgia? I mean, if ever today's modern-day internet athlete needed Exhibit A for why it's all about me and not about we, what happened this week to Florida State is Exhibit A.
Tim, hold on.
One more quick question for Tim. How would you change it? Right? What would you do?
Well, we expand it. We already.
Yeah,
know
but I'm saying just for right now. Let's just pretend that we're not expanding for a second. Let's just stay focused on this year. What would you have done to make sure that in your view that Florida State would have gotten in?
No, it's not about that. It's not about getting Florida State in. You're missing the point entirely. It's about telling the truth and being transparent from the committee's perspective on why they did what they did. You put yourselves in this position, okay? We scrutinized the very first committee. Who's making up this committee? Remember, we all knew Archie Manning was going to be on it. Then he had to have knee operations, couldn't be. Condoleezza Rice is going to be. Nobody really knows who's on these committees anymore. You mentioned Kelly Whiteside's good for you. You like her. She's a friend of yours. That's fine. I understand that. I do. But when you're part of a corrupt system, there's no way out, Lars. There's no way out. This was destined to fail. Absolutely, completely destined to fail from the jump. And it only happened because after the BCS debacle of the rematch of LSU and Alabama in 2011, too many people were in smoke-filled rooms afterwards said, we got to put a stop to this. And, of course, it didn't really matter. A few years later, we had an SEC championship with Alabama and Georgia. Could have had probably more if we'd stayed at 4, regardless of whether they played in the SEC title game or not. This was a system made to fail. The only change I would make from a committee standpoint with this god-awful system is be bold enough and transparent enough to admit what the discussion was about. And the discussion, we have since learned, Dan Wetzel did a wonderful job, I thought, in his article in Yahoo. It was a conundrum. If Georgia wins, Florida State's in. If Alabama wins, Texas. Brought yourself, boys. You're coming to the SEC, and we help you get in your first college football playoff, because that is exactly what happened. Have the guts to come forward and tell the truth. They don't tell the truth. And that is corrupt.
Had they just come out and been all transparent about it, would you be okay with the four that they selected?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I would have been.
Ah, yes. Yeah. All right. Hey, Tim, yeah. Go hit the links. Go get some grocery shopping done. Appreciate your stance and your spirit.
Thank we'll you, talk Timmy. Well, this is awesome.
I've been this way for over 30 years, fellas. I've been fighting this fight, and no one's going to keep me from continuing to do it, and that's even with 12. If they don't change the criteria, I'm calling their ass out.
Good.
Thank you, Tim Brando.
Awesome. Thank you, Timmy.
Thank you.
You bet, fellas.
I think we're already getting follow-up calls, so we'll take them in just a moment on Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny but very cool afternoon, the high today 52. A freeze late tonight, clear with a low at 30. We look for a warming trend tomorrow and Friday. The sky mostly sunny both days. The high tomorrow 59, the high Friday 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 53 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Brought to you by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. Appreciate her sponsorship of our program. Let's go to the phones immediately. Reaction to Tim Brando. James, what's on your mind?
Yeah, this is all crazy. If Booger... And Tim, if LSU was in the exact same situation right now, their tune would be changed, okay? They hate Alabama, and that's the bottom line. If LSU had lost to Texas and beat Georgia and they got jumped up just like Bama, you're telling me Tim Brando would be talking the same way he's talking now? No way in hell.
Well, I don't know, because that didn't happen, but perspective and your loyalties, and I'm not necessarily saying this about Booger or about Tim Brando, but everybody looks at it from their own angle, their own perspective.
Yeah, I understand that. And you know, they're just talking Well, they're talking like the FSU kids are getting hosed, and they are, but nobody's saying, well, Bama beat Georgia, number one team in the country. What about those kids? You know?
Yeah, I think Georgia has a reason to be, you know, they were number one team in the nation for 2 years, so I don't know. Lars, your comment here.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Tim Brando is doing this, but there is a long list of media people that have made careers and literally millions of dollars by doing one thing, and that is agitating Alabama fans. The top of the list is Clay Travis. Clay Travis made his name by pissing off Alabama fans.
Hey, James, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. And call more often. Let's go to Warren.
No, it's great. It is what it is, and I wish we had the 12-team playoff this year.
Yeah, I do too. Great point. Good wrap. I think we've got Warren on hold listening to Big Noon Sports.
Hey, real quick. I'm sorry I didn't read the article that the gentleman had written. Don't want to relitigate FSU not getting in. They didn't get in. Don't want to get into the outrage and the kids feeling bad. I'm sure they feel bad. Fact is, Alabama's in. That's it. I know Clay Travis. yes, he made his living on hating Alabama. One thing he will not relent on is that Nick Saban is a great great coach. Alabama's a great team. You won't get him to deny that. Look, you're going to get the 12-game playoff. The Blue Bloods will be up at top. The great teams will surface at top. The mediocre teams will fight it out at the bottom. At the end of the day, you're going to see the same scenarios, okay? That's how it's going to happen. It's just going to happen that way. Nobody will be happy. You'll get the same scenario that you have right now. And that's how it's going to be. The sportscasters, the guys who, like yourselves, who make their living talking about sports will continue to do so. That's how the world turns. You write articles, you do those things that make yourself happy and the sports fans happy. We'll call into these shows and we'll gripe and complain. That's how politics work. That's how the social economic system works. It's no big deal. I love it. That's why I call into your show. I like to talk about it and I enjoy it.
Hey, we kind of like it too, Warren.
Enjoy doing it. FSU, Florida State, the coach's attitude, how he responds, what he did, I think it's ridiculous. It shows no real class as a coach. He will play a game against Georgia. Georgia will drum them. And it's sad. It really is sad for a great season that he had. The ACC, in my opinion, is a very weak conference. Bobby Bowden had an opportunity to leave it in 92. He said, no, we're great right here. We can actually win a national title from the ACC. We're not going to move. Also, there's also reports that the holdup for them doing the moving into a 12-game playoff came from the ACC commissioner. That's out there. I don't know why Booger and all the rest of them who are complaining don't talk more about that. You know, these guys need to get on their game.
I love the fact he brought
up. In his defense, Tim Brando did mention that.
I love the fact you brought up Bobby Bowden. How do you think Bobby Bowden would have responded to this?
Yeah. I mean, we need to, so, we want to be all transparent. Be transparent about those things. You know, it's like a politician. They're not going to tell you the truth. But it's just like the NIL deal, you know. I mean, if we're honest the way we want to be honest about things, we could deal with this thing. But
all
guys,
right, Warren, we are flat out of time. I'm sorry. We'll pick it again up tomorrow with your phone call on Big Noon Sports.